Aloha.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Three nasty ways.
Aloha, mud babies, pod people, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your tiki leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew. I am back, bitches. It has been way too long. You know, I went to Asia to work for a couple weeks. Went over to Hong Kong, did Kuala Lumpur, Singapore. Shows were amazing. Surprised me. I know it shouldn't have. I think of myself as being a good comic, but I wasn't sure how the shows were going to go. If there was a language barrier, or, you know, they'd get my jokes, but I was wrong on both counts. They got the jokes. There was no language barrier. So it was an amazing tour. I will probably definitely go back. I've already been asked back. I just have to figure out those dates. So if you're in the area of Hong Kong, Kuala Lumpur, or Singapore, and actually looks like Bangkok might come through, and Shanghai on the next time that I run through the Asia area there. So it was so much fun. I'm looking forward to do it again. The food was amazing. I know people think of it's weird stuff that they eat over there. It's weird stuff. I don't know why they eat that. Well, I didn't see any weird stuff. I had a lot of chicken and fish, and I had a lot of noodle dishes, and all of them were amazing and spicy, just the way I love food. Spicy! I did come back almost 10 pounds heavier. Can you believe that? Yeah, you can. But I'm working on losing that. I'm back in the gym. I've been working out, and I'll get this off and get back into my fighting shape again as quick as possible. But enough about where I've been and what I've been up to. Let's get on with the show. I got a great guest this week. So coming back from being gone for a while, it helps to have a guest as good as this one to keep the interest of the people and bring them back to the podcast. You haven't left, have you? Tell me you haven't left. Anyway, today's guest is a comic that I know you know if you're in the comedy scene or aware of the comedy scene. He plays all the clubs around the nation. He just finished his second Showtime special. His first one, called Fun Size, was a major hit. So everybody, please welcome the comic genius of Mr. Brad Williams. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, it is so nice to have this person in the studio.
Basement.
I just took him to the imaginary land of Casa Bonita. Please welcome Brad Williams.
Hello. I'm happy to be in the studio. Basement. I'm glad to be here. And yes, we just experienced together, along with comics Ari Shaffir and Steve Simone, the wondrous place that is Casa Bonita here in Denver, and a place that I thought was fake.
It is not.
No, I saw the South Park episode, just like a lot of people did, and it's funny because now I'm posting videos and pictures from that, and a bunch of my LA people are just like, wait, they're just like me, like, that's a real place?
Yes.
It's real, and it's every bit as magical as Eric Cartman described it to be, with the cliff divers and a guy in a gorilla suit and the Black Bart's cave.
You did the whole thing.
Yeah, with a cheesy air cannon that hits you as you walk by, and it scares the crap out of you. It's awesome.
Anybody that's never been to Casa Bonita, uh-huh, you've got to go with comics.
Yeah.
You have to go with comics. That was one of the most fun experiences at Casa Bonita I've ever had.
There were so many things that made that great. Just all of our childlike enthusiasm, because as a comic, you have to kind of say yes to things.
Everything.
You have to say yes to crazy adventures. You have to say yes to saying jokes on stage that might be hurtful to yourself or your family. And you have to go along with things. And I don't know about you, but now that I've been a comic for 12 years, I respect all types of performers.
Yes.
Whether they're cliff divers at Casa Bonita, whether they're the guys doing the Western show at the amusement park.
To get shot and rolls off the roof.
Yeah. Any sort of dinner theater people. I respect all performers except magicians. Like, that's it.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Yeah.
What is it about magicians that still does not earn your respect?
Here's why I don't respect magicians. It's because, okay, let me say this. I don't respect bad magicians. And because you didn't come up with that trick. You read it in a book.
Or you got it at a store.
Yeah, or you bought your trick. And then I also hate the magicians that are like, they try to take themselves way too seriously. Like, it was said in the ancient Egyptian time that a man's spirit could be controlled by outside forces. Yeah, and then, like, you're saying it up. And, like, that part I don't like. Now, I've seen Penn and Teller. I love those guys because they don't take themselves too seriously.
Right.
And there's actual well-written jokes in there. And Penn sort of respects the artist stand-up, and he's always favoring comics and things like that. So and truly, there are some magicians that do original tricks that blow my mind that I go, you know what, respect to you. But all like the guys are like, oh, you're going to do the rings. You're going to cut the rope. You're going to cut the rope again.
Look, it's still one piece.
It's like, don't get me wrong, I still don't know how the trick is done, but if I saw the eighth comic do the same joke about the pill says your dick stays hard for more than 4 hours, call a doctor. Shit, I'm calling everybody. Like,
I'm calling a hooker.
Then no, I don't respect you. It's been done. Okay, so that's why I don't respect magicians. So I respect all performers, and it was cool to see the cliff divers get into it. That part was fun. I loved the fact that there were two goth kids there, and that was fun because, as Steve Simone pointed out, he's like, watching goth people try not to have fun.
Have a good time.
Oh my, that's funny for me. Like, just seeing, like, this 18 to, like, 15 to 17-year-old girl.
Goth chick.
Yeah, just, like, with the black and the eyeliner and the torn black pants and 9,000 bracelets. Sitting in Casa Bonita, which is just fun forever. It's just nonstop fun. It's like, I love watching goth kids walk around Disneyland while happy music plays, and they're just sitting there like, life is evil, life is pain, everything's darkness. Like, it's just fun. It takes such a commitment when you're a goth person because you can't smile. I have to hate everything. You can't see a goth kid like licking ice cream like, oh, this is so pecan praline. This is awesome.
What happens if you're a goth kid and a song you like comes on?
Can't like it.
You can't show, like, what? Do you just have to fight the feeling of?
You just have to sit there and be like, yeah, Rob Zombie rocks. It's awesome.
Yeah, if you like that kind of thing.
Sure, I mean, if you're into that, whatever.
Did you ever go through any kind of weird period like that? Were you ever a surfer kid or a goth kid?
Okay.
Skater boy.
Well, I'm from Orange County, so Orange County, California. So, yeah, I did go through a small skater boy phase where, like, junior high and high school, I would always have bleached tips on my hair.
Oh, no.
Always.
Like a boy band thing.
Oh, yeah. I wanted it that way. See what I did there? I got a job. Yeah. And then I got a job at Hot Topic. That was my very first job.
Oh, my
job.
God. And
yeah,
where you got a discount on your clothes.
Yeah. And here's the thing that was fascinating about Hot Topic is that I dress how I do now, like jeans and t-shirts. Like, that's what I wore back in high school, too, because it was just the easiest thing to fit me. So, yeah, jeans and t-shirts. And for those of you who don't know, like, Hot Topic is the wannabe kind of goth store where everyone that works there is dressed crazily. So I walked into Hot Topic, filled out the application. They were like, they were looking at me. They're like, well, there's no crazy colored hair. There's no gauges in the ears. There's no tattoos. There's no dark clothing. There's no chains. But, midget. Weird enough. That's fine. Good.
Do you feel
that's alternative?
You feel you got that was your ticket to a Hot Topic?
Yeah. I think that all the other goth kids that walked into Hot Topic saw me and was like, man, that's so cool. How did you do that?
But you're the only employee that had to turn to a customer and go, could you get that for me?
Yeah, exactly. I did. Someone's like, you know what? I kind of want to see that SpongeBob shirt up there. I'm like, I would love for you to get that SpongeBob shirt. Here's the hook.
Here's the hook.
Yeah, go for it. Have that. No, they just stuck me behind the register all the time for that very reason.
Yeah. Did people get in trouble for using the hook on their own? I've always wondered that because, you know, you see the hook there.
There's sweatshirts hanging up high and no one around.
Yeah.
Now, if a regular customer uses the hook, is that a no-no?
It is, only because of lawyers and lawsuits, to where if you're using the hook and you suddenly turn to the left and you bash your friend in the head, uh-huh, or you knock over the display and it all falls on an old woman, now they sue you because you weren't watching them and you weren't preventing them. So that's the only reason. But it's like, comics are kind of like alcohol in a way, in that you could make anything better by just adding alcohol. Like, and you make anything better by adding comics. Like, you just throw us in the mix, and now we're all trying to make each other laugh. And we're all tagging each other's jokes, and we're all singing the Casa Bonita theme song. And like, there was Steve Simone, who is the most adult child ever. Like, I love watching Steve experience things like that.
Did you see his eyes were like a kid?
They were like wide the whole time. That's Steve Simone. And that's his act, too. It's all about, remember when you were a kid? And we went through the Black Bart cave, and this kid, he's like 11 or 12, he like runs out of there, and he's all like, oh, man, that was scary. And like, this guy lit up, and he scared me. And then Steve, like dead serious, like grabs the kid by the shoulders and goes, was it real? And the kid's like, no, you idiot. Like, no, it's not real. And Steve's like, I want it to be real. Like, and then just, and of course he's joking, but the kid's 12, and that's the age where you're too cool for everything.
For anything.
Yeah, so, yeah, he was like, what? No, of course not, idiot. Guy thinks it's real. And there was one kid, and you saw when this happened, they were all outside, and then this group of kids was walking away, and I turned to one of the kids and said, hey, I was the guy in the gorilla suit. And the kid just goes, I know. And then there was beat, beat, beat. Wait, what?
What? Yeah, he turned around. He went, what? Like, yeah. What?
What? What? No, wait.
He was so cool, he was just going to agree.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's kind of like that Jimmy Kimmel lie witness news bit where you just say outrageous things that you saw on the news, which are not true.
Yeah.
And then people on the street just go along with it because they don't want to be the idiot that hadn't seen the news. So you say, like, wow, did you see when Donald Trump pulled out a red hot poker and branded Sarah Palin? Do you think that was excessive? People are like, oh, yeah, I thought that was a little excessive. Yeah. That was not necessary.
I love those. It's like, just shows the idiocracy of people these days.
Well, there's – and one thing that my dad always taught me it's all right to say I don't know, because if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know. So
and
why
you're going to learn it.
Yes. So why talk about things that you don't know about? If I was sitting at a table with Neil deGrasse Tyson and he's talking to me about string theory and physics and everything like that, I'm not going to be like, oh, absolutely, and just like go along with it.
I would just go, I love string cheese.
just be that guy. Just try to relate
it
back.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, so is that kind of like Back to the Future? Like, is that shit real?
Is that like the black hole?
Yeah, like, can you do that? I rented the black hole one time.
Yeah,
it was pretty good.
Disney movie, right?
Yeah, man. And then what was the thing that you heard a kid say?
Oh, I was in the bathroom, and I heard a kid, I looked like same thing, 11 or 12, go, uh-huh, this place sucks. It's not even air-conditioned.
How mad does that make you?
What? Out of all that's going on in this whole building with divers and
lights,
Bart's kid, lights,
yeah,
and
just
waterfalls, and all you could think
people,
of is complain about.
Yeah, and all their puppet shows and everything like that. And he's like, oh, no, air conditioning.
And it was air conditioned.
That's the thing.
Like, it wasn't air conditioned to his specifics.
There's not an individual thermostat to get to your exact temperature. And it's like, and also, I'm like, you live in Denver. If you want it to be cold, go outside.
Step outside.
Go outside. It's going to be cold. Like, you're too hot, take two steps that way. You're fine. And now I'm going to sound like old man Williams right now because I'm going to, these kids these days. But I think because everything is so tailored to kids now, where it's like, well, okay, everybody gets the trophy, everyone gets the A, everyone moves on, nobody can be bullied, nobody can be called stupid.
Safe spaces.
Yeah, safe spaces. Like, everything is, nothing will ever hurt your child. That when a kid walks into Casa Bonita, a dreamland, a place that you and I would just, our heads would explode.
As a kid walking in there?
If we were 12 and we walked in there, what the fuck? Like, so they could walk in there and be like, I mean, it's all right, but I mean, pfft.
I mean, you can tell the fakes, the rocks are fake.
Yeah, temperature's not, you know.
Temperature's not right.
No, it's like 68 degrees. I prefer 71. Go fuck yourself.
I know.
There's so many, here's what I wish. I wish that they would invent this. I wish that they would have a birth control spray.
Uh-huh.
Instead of pepper spray, birth control spray.
You hear somebody talking stupid like that, you just go...
Yeah, and like, nope, no babies for you.
Ever.
And it's like, yeah, or it's like, oh, it's at least like a month or like something to where like, I don't like that. Like, done. Like,
maybe it has an IQ. When it hits a certain IQ level,
yeah.
If your IQ raises...
Yeah, then it's the like, mist. then it goes away.
Yeah.
Or at least, yeah, you have to like fill out a test and then send it in, and then if it's correct, and then you get the antidote. Yeah. Do that. And there's so many times where there'd be people that are driving for 8 miles with their turn signal on, and you're hanging back because you don't want to be the guy that, like, creeps up on them, and then, now you're coming over. Just walk up. Just do that. There's so many times when I would just love to bust out that birth control
spray.
Oh, man.
You would just walk around Walmart.
Right. Oh. Just so you hear someone in a restaurant like, well, I'm not going to vaccinate my baby. Double. And I'm going to take your kid and I'm going to put him in child protective services because no.
I am never going to vaccinate.
Oh, my God. I see, there's certain things. And here's the thing that I love about getting older is before, when you were trying to make friends and trying to be a part of in crowds and trying to be accepted in social circles, you would smile and nod and go along with whatever
people said.
Just be like, oh, well, I don't want to be the one that says something wrong. Now you get older, it's like, I have my friends. I have the people that care about me.
I don't need anymore.
I don't need to impress people. So if I'm in a group and someone's like, well, my wife just had a kid, and I mean, I'm not going to vaccinate because that gives you autism. What the fuck? And like, I will talk to you, and I'll be like, and I did that one time where I was meeting people. It was at a cocktail party of some kind, and someone said like about the kid and not going to get their kid vaccinated. And I turned to them and was like, "No, like you have to vaccinate your kid." And they're like, "Well, you never know." I'm like, "No, you do know, because there's never been one paper written that disproves that and says that it causes autism. Like, there's never been one bit of medical evidence whatsoever."
Jim Carrey's ex-girlfriend said,
"Well, the girl with big titties said it was true, so it's
gotta be true.
Girls with big titties don't lie." Oh my God, yes they do. Yes they do. And it's just like, you just want to shake them. And then I went through this entire argument where I explained all the medical journals and how all my friends that are doctors, they vaccinate their kids, and that should be a heads up right there. Like, I do what the doctor does. And then after all that I said, they pulled out the magic thing that any stupid person can use in any argument that makes them feel better about themselves and their opinion. I disprove everything, and at the very end, he goes, "Yeah, but you never know." It's like, no, we know. There's rappers right now tweeting that the earth is flat. And they're like, oh, well, never know. They're showing pictures from top of just little hilltops. And they're showing, these cities are 14 miles apart. How come there's no elevation change? Because the earth is hundreds of, like, thousands of miles across.
Yeah, it doesn't curve at the corner.
No. You're not going to see your curve in, like, in two cities, you fucking idiot. And then, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's a physicist, is explaining everything to why this is false and why this is not true. And then they go, I don't know. The rapper, the rapper with his formal education, he's saying that, fuck off.
Who are you going to...
Spray.
Who are you going to believe? The guy with the gold grill or the physicist?
Tila Tequila tweet out that the world is flat because when planes take off, they are still able to land and not, like, because if the world was round, they would fly and go directly into space. And like, bitch, gravity.
gravity, you fucking idiot.
I didn't see that she was doing it, too.
Yeah, she's one of those earth-flat people. Gravity. Like, if you don't believe in gravity, look at your tits in 10 years. Gravity. Magic. Spray.
Now, who started this whole flat earth thing? This has been gone since Columbus days, since somebody sailed around the world.
It's like, I get why people in the medieval era or back in Columbus, I get why they thought the earth was flat.
Because they sailed away and never came back.
Right.
You watched them disappear on the horizon
line. Yeah, and you're like, oh, they fell off the edge. You know, I get why they didn't have
photography,
satellites from space, time zones, and everything. Like, it's so many questions. And then, here's what it is that before, everyone that had these opinions just kind of kept them to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be flat earth people, whether it be out and about racists, like KKK members, they're like, okay, well, I'll be racist at the KKK meeting. And then
at the meeting.
I'm safe there. Now we have social media.
Yeah.
Now anyone could spout off any crazy fucked up opinion that they have, and people could just, now other like-minded people could be like, oh, dude, yeah, I think that, and I could bond with you, and especially if they have tons of Twitter followers, it just goes out to so many people.
And then you get attacked. That's the thing, too. You can't have a discussion without being attacked.
No. And you know, one of the rules of communication, I went to college for communication, and I took a bunch of conflict classes in terms of conflict resolution, argumentative classes, and public speaking classes. And one of the rules they teach you is the first person that goes to personal attacks, like, you're stupid, you're dumb, well, that can't be true because you're fucked up, your mom's an idiot.
Yeah.
That person is usually wrong. That person has the weakest argument.
Because they can't defend it, so
Just remember that's a rule of communication. So when you see Trump every 5 seconds being like, well, why should I believe you? You're an idiot. I have a huge brain. Yours not so huge. So, like, just remember that when you see these guys go on the personal attack. And I'm not going to talk too much about politics because personally I think they're all a little fucked up.
Every one of them.
Yeah, every one of them. So because people that are truly smart aren't going to be president. They're going to be Elon Musk. They're going to start their company. They're going to build a. They're going to start a revolution from within. They're going to make a. They're going to be Steve Jobs. Like, those are going to be people. The ones that want to rule the country.
Yeah,
that's an ego problem.
But what do you think about the people though? Give Trump as the example that just really want to, if he does, to change the world, because you and I know it's going to shit. I mean, you can see the society is on a downward curve.
Yeah.
The stupidity, you know, they don't want to read. They don't care. They want sound bites of news, and they don't get the whole story.
Absolutely. They believe some internet story that someone posted on Facebook.
Is flat.
Yeah, and they go, see? This person said that this magazine said that the trails in the sky are chemtrails that the government's using to try to poison our brains and use mind control. It's like,
they're trying to sterilize us.
Where did you read that? And trust me, if they are trying to sterilize us, it's not working because people are still fucking and people are still having dumb kids.
Yeah,
they're still people.
I've said this for years.
Yeah.
It's the gene pool.
Yeah,
it's kind of like intelligent people have one kid, maybe two.
Right.
And then you've got people that have like 8, 9, 13 kids.
And intelligent.
That gene pool grows faster.
Right.
And so, of course, at one point, we're going to be overgrown with like, I love Oprah. You know?
Yeah. And you're right, because intelligent people know that they have a job that in order to maintain the lifestyle that they like, they can only support 1, 2, possibly 3 kids.
And raise it right.
And raise them right and have enough attention to
afford the education.
Sure. All those things. The ones that have 8, 9 kids are like, well, I put my dick in again because it felt good.
Yeah,
and then,
I got another baby.
Maybe.
Yeah, we get another check. You know?
Yeah.
We got WIC.
Yeah, another check from the government for my 9th kid. Like,
so that's what I'm saying. At some point, somebody has to step up and go, this whole shit's got to change. I mean, you see what I'm saying? And that's the only reason I think some people are relating to Trump is they're so far going, fuck, somebody do something.
Right. And that is the thing where he is at least saying things that are different than any other politician that we've ever heard ever.
Yeah.
And that's what's appealing. So while he may not be coming up with actual ways and plans to do the things that he plans on doing, he's saying it. And he's not going the uber PC route of trying to please all sides all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why you have guys like Ted Cruz and Donald Trump getting what they're getting and getting support, because it's just anything different.
Like anything, please.
It's anything. Because if you
say you're going to change the education system, say yeah. you're going to stop this, cut out one program.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because if you ate shit sandwiches for 30 years and someone said, hey, I got some stale cheese over here, you'd be like, oh, fuck, stale cheese.
Cheese, that's better than shit.
Oh, that's so much better. Oh, my God, stale cheese. That's the greatest thing I've ever had in my life.
That's like going to Casa Bonita.
Oh, my God. Well, that's what we ate. But, yeah. Well, that's the thing is when we were posting those pictures, there was a bunch of people like going like, yeah, but the food there sucks. I know.
Yeah.
I know it sucks.
But it's edible.
It's edible.
It can doctor it. You add hot sauce.
Yeah.
It's not too bad.
Cover enough.
What people don't understand about Casa Bonita food, I know how we went from Trump to shitty food, but.
Yeah, makes sense.
But they try to mark. Imagine it's for kids.
Yeah.
Kids don't like spicy food.
No.
Kids barely eat cheese.
Yeah.
So they make the menu tolerable.
Kids. Yeah, kids. It's a place for kids. There's a reason that when you get a Happy Meal, it's not five-star cuisine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember, like, when I was a kid, I would go to Taco Bell and order tacos with just meat and cheese. No lettuce. Just meat and cheese, because lettuce is a vegetable. Fuck that. And I would eat, like, four of these tacos and then still have the energy to do amazing things.
Yeah.
Like, because you're a kid. So Casa Bonita is perfect for kids, because you go there, you make the shitty food, and they eat it, and it's quick, it's easy, it's cheap. And then the parents sit at the table, have a moment to themselves, while the kid runs around,
burns off some energy.
Yeah, and goes to the arcade, and then goes to the cave, sees the cliff divers, like, and then the parents are just sitting back like,
That's a good point about the McDonald's burger.
Yeah.
Because I feel the same way about Chuck E. Cheese. Like, people, you take your kid to Chuck E. Cheese. Yes, it's going to be crappy pizza.
Yes.
But kids don't care.
They don't care.
They take two bites, and they don't even eat the whole slice.
Right.
I'm too hot to eat.
Yes.
Because they're running and playing.
Right. And they have the energy to go and run in the tubes and the video games and everything like that. And now, so yeah, they don't care. Think about what you ate. You ate peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day. I had Lunchables, yeah. and that was amazing.
Imagine the best gourmet meal that you've ever had with just sautéed onions and mushrooms,
right.
and cheese melted. Kids would not eat a beautiful meal like that.
No.
So they would have to feed them ugly.
You have to feed them shit. Yeah, you have to feed them shit because that's what their taste buds like. And then you, even if you took the time to prepare a wonderful, extravagant bacon wrapped scallops, you know, and things like that. Yeah, or they would just eat it so fast and not appreciate it, and then just so they could go back out and play and do more. That's what I did with my meals. My mom would make these great, wonderful meals. My dad would love them, and he was happy. Then I would just be like, well, yeah, but I got to get back to saving the princess. So, just like food scarfed down, and then go back out. Then I went outside to play street hockey. Like that, that was my childhood.
Yeah.
Just going back. What gets me back out to play? Sitting down for a meal? Oh, that was
Here's
another
thing that bugs me about kids and meals on the podcast called Remasculate, because I'm trying to bring back the world that we used to live in.
Yeah.
Kids shouldn't have a choice in what they eat.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, I don't like this. Well, I'll make you something else.
No.
I used to starve.
Yeah.
If my mother made a meal and set it in front of you,
yeah.
I don't like this, then you all could right. wait till breakfast.
Yeah.
And you hear somebody like, "Well, I'll stop at McDonald's. I'll make you some mac and if you don't want the spinach souffle, I'll make you some mac and cheese."
Gotta eat it.
Kids should not have choices like that.
Right. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not going to be like you find out your kid hates mushrooms, so you make mushrooms every night. It's
you don't
not like,
torture them with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, it's not like that. But if you make them a meal and you spend a lot of time on it, you use ingredients that you think that they like. And they're not allergic to, then yeah, they should be expected to eat. And if they don't, great. you're not going to eat, or go to the cupboard, find a couple crackers, like whatever that's going to hold you over. Whatever, that's fine. Like, and now that will teach them. That will teach kids to appreciate, because like I was raised how you were raised. If it was on our plate, we had to eat it. There was no other options.
My dad would say, at least take a bite of it. At least take one bite of it.
Try one bite of everything. And out of an entire plate of food, well, if I didn't like whatever casserole, then there was the salad. If I didn't like the salad, there was some bread. If I didn't like whatever, there was something.
Well, how were you with food touching as a kid?
What do you mean?
Food actually touch each other on the plate?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, beet juice would run into your corn.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Do you? Even as a kid?
Yeah, as a kid.
I've gotten to separate? Oh, yeah, I had to separate when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I've gotten over that now. But when I was a kid, like, there had to be a pile of corn, a pile of mashed potatoes, and a pile. They couldn't just, like, touch.
Ooh, yeah.
And my dad would always go, it goes in one hole and comes out the one hole. Just eat it. It goes in one. Like, yeah, but it doesn't taste going in like it should coming out.
Gotta hope not.
But that, because my dad would be one of those, you've seen people, they just sort of mix it up.
Yeah,
sort of
mix it up. Just make a giant stew. Yeah. Yeah, you don't like it? Yeah,
no.
Yeah, everything's dust. Yeah.
That's one reason I didn't eat stew when I was a kid.
Because
stew was everything touching.
Wow.
Like the carrots are mushy and the potatoes are mushy. Can't I just have a carrot?
Now here's one thing that was interesting about me growing up and eating is that I was born left-handed. Like I was left-handed and mm-hmm. I would eat all my meals with my left hand. And my parents were like, "Whoa, left-handed, your life's going to be really hard." So they switched me. They forced me to do everything right-handed, and there's actually consequences to doing that. What that does to kids, and I didn't find this out till way later, but what that does is when you force a kid to switch hands, speech impediments.
Really?
Speech, yeah. And it gave me a stutter for the longest time. I had to go to speech therapy.
Me too.
Yeah.
I was a stuttering kid.
Yeah, me too.
I had to do the whole Sammy Snake sound. Sammy Snake sound.
Right?
Sammy Snake sound.
Oh, did you have to sing your words?
Uh-huh.
Yep, I had to do that.
I had to learn my tongue placement.
Yeah. Yeah. All that stuff, and it's amazing that now we make a living talking
for a living. but that was me as a kid.
Yeah. If you would have told my parents that I would make a living talking at age 9, 10, they'd be like, no fucking way, no shot. He has a better chance of being a football player.
Well, I can't believe they wanted you to change hands because
yeah, and which is weird because I'm a little person, so they're thinking like, well, the kids are gonna make fun of him because he's left-handed. That's like fifth down the list.
That was the first thing that popped. Well, I don't want life to be difficult for you left-handed.
Really? It's not going to be difficult because I can't reach anything? That's fine. I can't ever shop for clothes that fit me.
Mom and the kids make fun of me being left-handed.
Yeah. No kid would get that creative. No kid would have this canvas to work with and then go to... The left-handed thing, really? I'm at the time I'm probably like 2'9" as a fourth grader. Like I got a head that makes me look like a bobblehead doll. I'm still wearing clothes that fit me, which at that time was like kid shirts and like Bugle Boy and like stuff like that. And they're gonna go down that entire list and go, ooh, but he throws left-handed. What a fag! That's what you're going to do?
We don't want that for Brad.
That's the thing that you're going to... Oh, my God.
We don't want that for our Brad.
That's the thing that you're going to let happen. I don't talk about this on stage. I need to talk about this on stage.
Uh-huh. You should bring up the whole left-handed.
Yeah.
I don't want him to be... I don't like to be hard
now.
For him.
It cracks me up now. Like, you're right. As a right-hander, because you switched me, man, my life has been
improved.
Easy. Oh, so
it
easy.
It's so difficult. You know how hard it is to find left-handed small people scissors?
We saved him a life of turmoil.
So what actually got you into stand-up?
This is kind of cool. Well, first of all, I feel like I was trained to be a stand-up my entire life, and that goes to my dad. Because one thing my dad did do correctly was he... made me acknowledge the fact that I was different. He didn't try to hide the fact that I was a little person, that I'm, no, you're just like everyone else. No, not just like everybody else. And he knew that kids would make fun of me.
Right.
So he taught me from a very young age, humor will make people like you immediately. it won't ostracize you. So that can be good. And also, if a kid ever does make fun of you, hit him back.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
And for me, that can't be physical because the kids were always bigger than me. So it had to be verbal.
Yeah.
So any kid that ever made fun of me, boom. Jab right back at him, and like kids don't know how to deal with that. They had this whole plan in their head, like, I'm gonna make fun of him, I'm gonna say he can't reach that, and everyone's gonna cheer for me, uh-huh. And then they're gonna carry me off on their shoulders, like at the end of the Sandlot, and like all that's gonna happen. And then you throw something back at them, and it derails their train of thought.
That's sort of the same thing for me, is that mm-hmm. when I was younger, I was really skinny, and yeah. I had really bad buck teeth. I had braces, but when I was little, I mean, they were almost sticking straight out. Like I couldn't even. I had to close my mouth.
I've seen your early headshots.
So when I was a little kid, that's all they Bucky Beaver and How'd You Lose Your Teeth and Petrified Forest, and all that kind of.
Yeah.
And I had to learn a sense of humor. Like if I could come back at them,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Or you go in and when you meet kids, you would say something like, "Hey, anyone need me to open their soda for them?"
Immediately, first thing off,
just something like that, and they go, "Ah, he's funny."
Yeah,
Steve's funny.
So you have to, when you know you're slightly different, you have to
adjust. Yeah, you have to adjust, and then I was always drawn to comedy in that way. I remember in junior high, my buddy Ozzy showed me Eddie Murphy Raw. And man, we laughed. We laughed so hard at that special. And that special at the time was 10 years old. And we still, like, it still held up.
Was that I got your ice cream?
Yeah.
Is that one?
Yeah. Wait, no, that's Delirious.
Delirious, okay.
Raw.
Raw was the red?
Raw was purple.
Purple.
Raw was where he wore the purple jumpsuit. Raw was where he did some of the Cosby jokes. And it's weird. It holds up now. Some of it in the beginning is like real homophobic,
yeah.
Which at the time just kind of flew. We didn't know, but
I'm not supposed to laugh at it. Yeah, you feel bad now, don't
like,
you?
Like I remember. No, I don't feel bad because it's still funny. Like the joke where you say you see a police car in a gay neighborhood going woo 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 woo, and that's not a siren. It's just a gay guy on top of the car going woo woo. Yeah, come on, man. That's fucking funny.
And he actually, what was the anal sex joke that he did?
Oh.
That was, this is my impression of somebody doing something.
Yeah. Oh, man. I remember that bit. And then there was the, Eddie, what have you done for me lately, Eddie?
Yeah.
You know, half. Yeah, that whole thing. And I loved that. And I was drawn to stand-up comedy. And then that was right at the heart of like Comedy Central Presents, like right around 2001, 2002, 2003, like those years.
Yeah.
That's when Comedy Central Presents was the shit. That's when it was guys like Paulo Francisco, Dom Herrera's Comedy Central Presents. I remember that one. Yours.
I did mine then.
I remember
that was
2004. Yours. 2004. Yeah. Yours was, honest to God, was one of my favorites. And
shucks.
Dude, I've told you that before, haven't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was absolutely one of my favorites. I loved it. And I just loved all these people speaking their mind and having these opinions. And then when I was 19 years old, I went to see a Carlos Mencia show, and I took my dad, and I was in the audience. And Mencia at one point in the night starts making midget jokes. Now half the audience is laughing, and the other half is like looking at me like,
look over here.
And Mencia stops because he's like, wait, literally half of you guys are laughing and half of you guys, and he looks to the side that's not laughing. Goes, what, is one of them here? And I raised my hand. I go, yep. And he's like, oh shit. And he called me up on stage. He was just like,
oh, now you're hooked.
Yeah, he's like, I gotta talk to you. And he starts asking me questions. And the answers that I gave got laughs. And when I got those first laughs, I'm like, oh, man.
It felt so good, oh, didn't man. It? As the heroin oozed through your veins.
The next day, I was looking up open mic nights, found one at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, did that open mic night. Now, first, I went the first week just to be in the audience because I don't know the world of stand-up. I'm like, well, these guys might be really good.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I can go up to this level yet. And then I went and saw it. I was like, oh, no, these are homeless guys off the street that are
signed up for 5 minutes indoors.
Yeah, they're just like, hey, indoors, yeah, I'm good. I got a roof over my head. So the next week I went on stage and I had a good set for being your first time on stage. Made a couple people laugh and it was all comics. No one laughed for the entire hour because open mic comics have this thing in their head where it's like, well, if I laugh, then he's going to get the Tonight Show, and I'm not.
Yeah,
so
I'm not laughing at anybody.
Yeah, so I can't make anyone look better than me, so which is stupid logic if you want to explain that. My favorite part about the open mic night, my very first time on stage, was there was a comic there, and I won't say his name because he's still doing it. I want to trash him. But he was like walking up and down the line, and he's like, hey, are you new? Like pointing to me, and I go, yeah, this is my first time. And he goes, well, tell you what, man, stick with me, man. I've been doing this for 8 years. I know how to do it. And in my head, I'm like, been open mic comic for 8 years?
You haven't gotten any further than
that? I don't want to be you. That's like walking to McDonald's and like the 65-year-old guy is like, I've been here for 42 years.
You stick with me, I'll show you how to
go right to the top. You're like, nah, I'm going to do everything that you don't do. And then I'm gonna go somewhere. So, yeah, I just remember that. And the thing about comedy is the majority of people that I meet, comics that I meet that are doing it for a living, most of them just were immediately bit, like immediately, like their first set, if not their first set, then their second set. But not too many people like struggled with it for a year of like hating it.
Yeah.
Now you might struggle with success and struggle financially, obviously, but you're doing it because you love it.
Yeah, and you did well. I've told this to people before, and I may have even said it on here, but had I not done well my first time on stage,
yeah,
I'd have never gone back.
No.
I know me.
Yeah.
If I'd have sucked, that's it. This isn't for me.
Why would you put yourself through that stress again?
Yeah. So when I see people suck, I go, how do you keep coming back to suck again? How do you do it? You've seen this on New Talent. Yeah. Like, again, you're back again. You ate
same
it
material.
Another, same material. You ate it for again for another 5 minutes.
Yes.
What is in you that you enjoy this kind of torture?
I'm amazed by that because when I would say things that didn't get laughs, it's kind of like there's a rule of three in comedy that, you know, if you have a list of things, always have three. If you have two, add one. If you have four, take one away. And it's always one, two, joke. That's the rule of three. For me, it's also the rule of three with if a joke stays or not. If I do it three times and it doesn't get a laugh,
I'm not trying it again.
Nope.
But sometimes it's the placement of where it is.
Well, and that's why I have the rule of three where I like kind of move it around. Like, okay, one night could be the audience. Second night could be where it is in the act. Mm-hmm. Third night could be maybe my delivery. But like if it's just consistent over and over again, then why do it? Like, you know, it's a definition of insanity.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing every night and expecting a different result.
Yeah. And you hear these guys like, I'm polishing my act. No, you can't polish shit. All you have is shiny shit.
You have shiny shit. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And and that's always the advice I give to young comics when they ask me, like, what should I be doing to get better? And I say, well, here's the thing is I'll ask them, like, how much material do you have? Like, how much time could you do? And they go, like, oh, like, I could do 30. I could do 45. And I'm like, that's not good.
Yeah.
Because you're doing 45 minutes of shit.
Right.
Like, that's not good.
Yeah.
So what you should be doing is try to get 7 to 10 minutes of just
incredible
killer. Of just don't let them breathe. Of stuff where the feature actor, the headliner's in the back going, oh, God, I got to follow that. Damn it. Like, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Why are you trying to get 45 minutes? Nobody's asking you to do 45 minutes.
Right.
Wait until someone comes to you after doing that 10 minutes and says, you know what? You're going to feature next week. You're going to do half an hour. Then stress.
Yeah. Well, I've had guys come up to me and like, you know, what do you normally do when you headline? I go, well, 45 to an hour.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, I've got 45. I could headline. Well, no, though, there's a big difference between headlining and having 45 minutes.
Yes.
I could stand on stage and not speak for 45
right.
minutes.
Right. I could talk for 6 hours on stage.
I could just talk. I could mumble. Whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a big difference between thinking you have 45 and actually being able to do. And I always tell people that ask me about stand-up, I think you need at least twice, if not more, than the time you're supposed to do.
Yes.
Because what if you have to change gears? If you're supposed to do 30 minutes and they're not buying 10 of what you have, do you have enough to change gears?
Yeah, got to do something else.
So I always say have more than you think you're supposed to have.
Yeah. I mean, you and I both experienced that as headliners where you're on stage talking about something
and it's not working. So you're like, all right, well, maybe these people like dirty jokes. Maybe they like clean jokes.
Let me throw this little tasty crumb out
there. Yeah, maybe they like stories. Maybe they like more shock material where it's just like boom, 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 rapid fire. Like there's different ways that you can deliver material and different material that you can have. Like,
so you read a crowd too, basically.
Oh, all the time. Because
I tell I constantly go watch every comic to see what are they mm-hmm. what are they laughing at or what do they do. I'll avoid that if I have to.
Right.
But then you go, all right, they like this. They like the one liners.
Right.
Okay, they like the stories.
Yeah.
Or I watch the audience and go, okay, they're couples. Relationship
material. Yep.
So you just have to go and actually look and read your audience.
Yeah, and then sometimes I'll do a bit and it won't go well because it's considered edgy or whatever.
Too edgy.
Yeah, too edgy. And most of the time I'll call them out on it, and oftentimes that helps. Like if you say like, you guys like, you're being idiots right now. Like, this is funny. I know you want to laugh at this, but you're just afraid of what someone's going to think about you.
Yeah.
So fucking laugh at it. Well, like, we're going to have a good time. There's that one trick that I learned in the past 3 years, and I've been doing this for 12 years. It took me 9 years to learn this, and man, has it been valuable. Was when the crowd is noisy, when the crowd's chatty, I used to try to yell over them.
Just get louder.
Yeah, mistake.
Get softer.
Yes. See, veteran headliner, you know that trick. Took me 9 years to figure it out, where I try to yell over people, and then it just makes the dumb people yell louder so they can hear themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you go quieter. And then what they do is the guy that's like, yeah, that's pretty funny. I fucked this watch. Oh, shit.
Ooh, I'm loud.
Yeah, I'm loud. And then he
or the audience, the other people go, quiet. We can't hear him.
Self-police. Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that. Oh, man.
The tricks.
If I had known that trick 4 or 5 years in. Now, but here's the thing, is that trick wouldn't work at the sports bars where I learned stand-up, the open mic nights, because you got to deal with the hot bartender, you got to deal with the TV showing whatever game is on, the dartboard, the pool table, you got to deal with all that. And so there, I'd be louder just to be like, look over here!
Yeah.
Look over here!
Yeah.
What's this? You know, jumping up and down. So people go, where's a midget on stage screaming? I should pay attention to him.
Those shows are becoming quite popular on their own now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like comedy clubs are doing well, but a lot of times bar nights or like these theme shows that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been having people go, hey, you ought to come over and do such and such night. And I go, at the sports bar? Oh, yeah, but we pack it out. And I go, at the sports bar?
Yeah, these, like
I worked past that.
Yeah, I worked really hard so I wouldn't have to go back to those places.
Yeah, but they've made like a new resurgence. They're actually more popular sometimes than actual clubs.
Oh, no, there's plenty of nights. I remember in Hollywood, comedian Jay Davis, you used to run a night at a Irish pub called Dublin's, and Dublin's was the spot in comedy. I remember like that's where Dane Cook cut his teeth and became really popular and good. That's where Alonzo Bowden, he came out to LA and no one knew who he was, and then he went out on Dublin's and then like killed at this Irish pub, and it fucking made.
Where was it
guys.
Located?
It was I only went there one time, but it was on this was on Melrose.
It sounds familiar. That's why I was thinking maybe I've been by.
Yeah,
there, but.
Yeah. It was this little Irish pub that they would turn into this amazing comedy night, and it was the place to be.
I'm thinking that's the same place that I went to. Ralphie May was in there.
Yeah, Ralphie would stop by a lot.
Yeah, I think that's. I was there. Ralphie. I saw Jay Moore.
Yeah.
One time.
Yeah, he would go there too. And the thing is. There's something about killing at a place where you're not supposed to kill. Yeah.
If you can kill there, you can kill anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, like, there's this one young comic that I'm kind of mentoring right now, and I get mad at her so much because I go, hey, like, how many times do you go up this week? She's like, well, they asked me to do this one show, but I looked at the lineup, and I looked at the venue, and I was like, that's not for me. I'm like, wrong answer. You're not good. You're not good enough yet to where you can say not for me.
You needed to do stage time everywhere,
every night.
Like
every
where time. I started in Houston with all those guys, Hicks and Kinnison. We used to do
Outlaws, man.
Yeah, we used to do a strip bar. It was an actual strip bar that did comic, booby dancer, comic, booby dancer, comic. And if you could make them laugh, you could kill the next weekend at the comedy club.
Yeah, guys that were there to see tits, and you are not tits.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have to make them forget
for 10
about titties and forget the fact that in 10 minutes they're going to see another pair of titties.
Again?
Yeah, like, you have to do that.
But
absolutely.
The thought of that now would scare the crap out of me. The thought of that right now, like, you know, when we get done with this, Brad, I got to go do a titty club. That'd scare the shit out of
me
again.
Right, right. But that kind of stuff made it to where now, like, because I did those rooms, because I did those gigs, now I don't throw anything up in front of me. Don't care. Throw Eric Myers up in front of me. Eric Myers is this comic out of Florida who's just a beast. But, like, he hasn't quite made it to headliner yet because he's got some alcohol issues that he's definitely working through. But trust me when I say he is a killer. He leaves audiences in just shambles. I have him open for me. Because I want to follow that.
Yeah.
I want to go on.
I like that, too. I would rather ride a big wave.
Hell yes.
Than try to paddle back out.
Build up from nothing?
Yeah.
Oh, man. And you and I have had those weeks where we're the headliner and you see the feature act and every night it's that shit where you're like, all right.
First 5 minutes of mine is going to suck while I try to get them back.
Yeah. Try to build them up out of this shit. But, you know, it all builds character. It all builds to your voice. It all builds your ability.
I just wish I didn't have to work. And this is not a slam. I mean, if people like it, I just don't want to have to work with guys that are trying to be deep and edgy and thought-provoking.
Right.
In a comedy club.
Right. And because, like, Hicks could do that because that's who he was.
And he was closing the show.
Yeah. So, he didn't...
Don't go out there, just try to piss him off, because that's your 30 minutes. It's my 30 minutes.
It's like, it's...
You
it's,
people are just stupid.
Yeah, no, don't do that. It's
don't you? Have
show.
You had to do that? Where you're like,
yeah.
I know you're a good comic. Do your good shit.
Right.
Just do your good... Don't try to make them mad at you.
No. Kill. Do well. And the thing is that you have to... And this goes through for deep voices... Prop comedy, silly, angry. If that's not who you are, it's not going to go well. Like, if you talk to Bill Burr off stage, he is that angry.
Yeah.
All the time. I've seen him give advice to his openers when the opener's like, I'm kind of bummed out because my chick is breaking up with me because blah, blah, blah. And he gets into it like it's his woman breaking up with him. Like, you know what? Fuck that bitch. This is what you do. And like, and he like gets into it. And I'm like, you're like, oh. That's who you are.
Use it.
You meet Jeremy Hotz.
Yeah.
Jeremy Hotz is neurotic as fuck on stage.
This is time for this.
Yeah, and he's holding
his fingers and
yeah.
Oh.
He's holding his hand up to his mouth and he looks so nervous.
Yeah.
And he's talking about the dentist and and then you meet him off stage, you're like, oh, that's real.
Yeah.
That's like you do everything but have the hand up.
Yeah.
It's all real. So like me, when I started out, I tried to be an angry comic because my favorite comedians
were angry comics.
Kinison, Mencia, like all these guys were like angry guys.
Yeah, the rants.
The rants, right. I'm not an angry dude. So when I would try to do it, it'd be false, it'd be fake. They could tell. And besides, nobody wants to see an angry midget.
Nobody.
They don't, because they're already feeling sorry for me. So then if I get like really pissed off about it and mad about it,
yeah.
Now they're feeling more sorry for me, and that's not good. So I found out that I'm a happy guy. People come to me all the time and they say, Brad, you're always so happy. So, great. That's why you should be on stage. Happy
guy. The only
guy.
Thing you should be mad about is losing out parts to that guy from Game of Thrones.
Fuck Peter Dinklage. That piece of shit.
That is the only thing you should...
Yeah. That guy. Yeah. And the thing is I would love to meet him because, like, of course... I'm a fan. Of course he's brilliant. Of course he's amazing. But fuck! There's that voice in the back of my head. It's not real, but it's still in the back of my head where I think, well, if he wasn't there, that'd be me.
Yeah.
I'd be in Game of Thrones. Yeah. I'd be doing that shit. Like, no, they didn't. Like, that part was for him.
Well,
he was great.
Have you ever contacted a casting agent and go, I could play his brother? You know?
Does he have a cousin?
I could be
something. Whatever.
I'm his long lost.
Just put me in there for one scene.
I'm the kid he didn't know he had.
Yeah. I'll fall down the stairs as he's leaving the house, and the other character goes, who the hell's that? He's like, oh, it's my kid brother.
Well, do you
like,
remember in the movie Showgirls? Did you ever see the movie Showgirls?
Of course I did.
Remember when the showgirl wanted to be the lead showgirl, how she tripped the one
and
had to take her place?
Yeah, she threw down the pearls. on the stage, and the girl falls, like breaks her leg, and then it's like, oh, next one up, next one up. You're like thinking to yourself, like, that's all I have to do.
That's
to
all
glitch.
You got
to.
That's all you got to do.
That's all I got to do. I got to pull like. I gotta switch a prop sword out for a real sword on the Game of Thrones set, and then the world is mine.
So drop some dragon eyeballs, and he stumbles.
Right? Yeah. I mean, thankfully, I'm one of the only little people that's doing like comedy. There's don't get me wrong, I'm not ignorant to their comics. If guys are listening to this, going, "What about Tanya Lee Davis?" All right, first of all, how the fuck do you know about Tanya Lee Davis? secondly, I know,
and like, she's killing it in England, by the way.
Yeah,
killing it in England.
Great, doing such great work, and I love the fact that she's over there.
And
I'm here. They got a guy named Nick Nowicki who kind of does the alt rooms and is more acting. Does a lot of acting stuff. Great. We're all in our different circles. We're all like, so, because I know, like, if I ever got super famous, someone could probably throw my act up next to Tanya Lee Davis, and there'll be some similarities. Like, because we've both have that same perspective. That's the life that we both lived.
Right.
So, so I'm glad that she's over there and I'm over here, so we don't have to worry about that.
Right.
I don't have to write a joke and go, ooh, wonder if Tanya Lee. Yeah. Do you do a joke about, like, and there's sometimes when I've watched some of her videos online, like, someone will send me one of her videos, like, hey, there's another dwarf comic. You know this woman? I go, yeah, of course, it's Tanya Lee. And then I'll watch her video and I'll see a joke and I go, fuck, why did I watch that video? Now I can't do that joke anymore.
Yeah,
damn
it. In good conscience, I can't.
Yeah, if I had, I used to be ignorant. I used to be just go out on stage and do it, but now, damn it.
There was a guy that was doing Tiny Hulk Hogan. Did you ever see him? Or
Tiny Hulk Hogan? No.
Yeah.
Who was that?
He was around Huntsville, Alabama, where I had worked with him.
Did he wrestle or do comedy?
He did comedy, but he wore the bandana and he had the mustache. And his opening joke was, I'm Hulk Hogan if you threw him in a dryer. That was his opening joke.
There you go.
And I don't even know if he's still doing comedy anymore.
Which, by the way, do you need to do the Hulk Hogan part? Do you need another hook?
Yeah.
You're already a midget, dude.
Yeah. But he definitely...
Problem solved.
He definitely came... Had the bandana and the blonde mustache and the... And that's what he played off as Tiny Hulk Hogan.
He looked in the mirror, saw a dwarf, and went... Yeah, but what else?
Yeah, I need a hook.
I could be Tiny Hulk Hogan. Oh my God, that's essentially like my parents.
Yeah,
just like,
yeah,
well,
I know. You could be the next Colonel Sanders,
right?
You know how
I would love that. Daryl Hammond, Norm MacDonald, me.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God, it's finger licking good.
Yeah.
Oh, I could totally do that.
Just
Colonel Sanders.
Get an outfit,
right?
Film a little bit on your phone. Send
start
it to
doing,
him.
Start doing YouTube's. Like, hey, I know you're paying Norm.
Uh huh. And you sell wings. You just sell wings.
Ah, there it is. Do it up. Like, yeah. He's got the big piece. He's got
the
big breast. He sells the bucket. But what about when you have the snack pack. Yeah, the two wing snack pack. And I go up there. Sometimes you don't want the whole bucket. Sometimes you just need a quick pack of protein power. That's when you come to KFC. Because hi, I'm Colonel Sanders. Then you have Norm MacDonald right next to me going, "No, I'm Colonel Sanders." And I go, "I'm pretty sure I'm Colonel Sanders." Yeah. Get the two wing snack pack. It's finger licking good.
Yeah,
ah, fuck.
See?
There we go. I got to write that now. I got to shoot that.
I can see that working really well.
Sure. Well, because I remember I actually got a commercial that was kind of like that for Jack in the Box. They had this mini sirloin burgers, and they had a bunch of little people, and they were mini cowboys.
Uh-huh.
And there was even a theme song, "Yippee-ki-yay, mini sirloin burgers." And I was in that commercial.
Were you?
Yeah, and then they brought me on Jimmy Kimmel Live because Jimmy Kimmel was sponsored by Jack in the Box, and the mini sirloin burger cowboys went on to Jimmy Kimmel Live. It was awesome. It was like it was a cool little ad campaign.
And
it was fun.
How did they let you down? how were you removed from the sirloin saddle?
Well, we did two commercials, and then that was it. the phone just never rang again. And it was funny because I actually did Jimmy Kimmel Live 4 times before I actually met Jimmy Kimmel. Because I was always part of a sketch
for a bit.
That he wasn't around for.
Yeah, that he was not around for. And then when I finally did meet him, I brought that up to him. And he was like, wait, what? We've never met? Because he and I have a bunch of mutual friends, the guys at Kevin and Bean, it's a radio show out in Los Angeles. That's where Jimmy got started. He kind of was in L.A. as the sports guy on the Kevin and Bean show. So he had heard of me through those guys, but then we just had never met. So when he finally met me, it was a pretty weird moment.
Yeah.
But comics have that all the time because we tour and we see people's posters.
We know each other from seeing, like, coming or the week after.
Yeah. I get to watch certain guys' videos for 4 days, five days.
Next week.
Yeah. And I see their jokes. And then, like, I've had that happen multiple times. I ran into John Mulaney recently and we both had that where, like, We both were talking to each other, and then we both kind of paused for a second and went, wait, have we met before? And then, like, oh, no, we haven't.
No, but
wow.
Do you ever watch the videos of yourself before a club and go, I need to take that bit out?
Yeah, I've done that.
They've been showing this in line or every night before.
Yeah.
Like, I can't open with this.
No, I can't open with the joke that they've been looking at for the last week.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, I got to get you. You have two shows tonight. At the Comedy Works.
Yeah, I do.
I gotta get you back to the club. So thanks for doing the podcast. I appreciate it.
Of course, man. This is fun. And I just wanted to kind of fanboy out. I've already told you that I love your special and it was one of my favorites. But and I don't have time to go into a lot of details. But when I was doing a morning radio show gig up in San Francisco, I was talking with you every morning. Talking about the stresses of a comedian doing morning radio, having to get told by a producer, you know what, that wasn't funny, maybe you should try this instead. And you're like, I'm a comedian, I know what's funny.
Yeah, we would text all the time, like, just hold out.
Or yes.
I'd tell her to shut up.
Yeah, yeah. So in front of everyone, I just want to say thank you for that. Granted, I still only lasted 6 months, but you made it a little easier, and you helped guide me through all that situation, so I didn't do something really dumb.
Well, I'll fan back to you.
Okay.
I find you very funny. That's one
Thanks,
of the things.
Man.
My girlfriend and I have talked about this. You're one of our favorite. And when comics or people ask me about who I like today, I throw out your name.
Oh, thanks,
because,
man.
There, you know, as a comic, I can't go, oh, I loved Kinison. Who? you have now moved into the realm of the comics that I like to say, these are the guys that I like.
Ah, that's cool, man. Well, I apparently we need to shut this podcast off and go jerk each other off right now.
Right now. But before we go, tell people how to find you.
Yeah, you can find me all my tour dates on my website, bradwilliamscomedy.com. I'm on the road constantly. If I'm not in your town, wait. I'll be there. You can follow me on Twitter @funnybrad. I try to post jokes along with promotional stuff. I'll try to post some funny stuff throughout the day.
Instagram. Snapchat?
I have Snapchat, but don't follow me on it. I never use it. Brad Williams Comic on Instagram, and then my podcast is the About Last Night podcast. I do it with Adam Ray, very talented comic, and we have a bunch of guests and great stuff. And
great podcast.
And, yeah, thank you. And the next time you're in L.A., you're on it, brother.
Yes!
You're on it. Let's do it.
All right, man, I appreciate it. Let's get you to the Comedy Works. Everybody, Brad Williams, thank you.
Thanks, man.
See ya.
In the basement of the mud flap house, flapping and poo, and their underwear, thingies and noos, and poo licks herself, and flap contemplates manly things. He thinks about guns and trucks and stooges three, men and boys, and that doesn't sound right. He thinks about boobs and bacon and power tools. Come with me, let your mask you leave. Oh, won't you come with me and remind